You're listening to In This League
on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Ace.
Featuring Bogman.
Oh, the yummy silence. Oh, it tastes so good, you guys.
Oh, he's on tilt. He's full tilt.
And the Welsh.
Nice.
Bogman, let's not overreact.
Do a little dance.
Are you serious?
Make a little pick. Get down tonight. What?
Nice.
Too high score, is that bad?
Visit InThisLeague.com for full podcasts and more. Coming to your ears now.
What's up? It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am one of said hosts that the announcer just told you about, Chris Welsh, with the Twitter handle, Is It The Welsh? The other host right there, that's Scott Bogman. You can find him on Twitter, at Bogman Sports. Very glad to be here on another edition of In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We have got a jam-packed show of fantasy baseball and fantasy football for you. Guest number one coming up here in about 4 or 5 minutes, Matt Modica. CTM Baseball, you can find him on Twitter. He's going to be joining us to talk about everything that is going on in fantasy baseball right now, like Danny Salazar, Kyle Schwarber, all the craziness. Hour two, though, Bogman has got a little treat for you, as Chris Harris from Harris Football is going to be joining us for 5 burning rookie questions for fantasy football talk. So you're going to get that in segments 4 and 5. And it's going to be pretty good, Bogman. Fantasy football, Chris Harris, Matt Modica, who's all over this network, kind of lit.
Yeah, I can't wait for all the baseball parts to be over.
Speaking of that, we have this thing. We kind of mentioned it in this interview with Matt Modica, and it's just beautiful. So the ITL Fantasy Baseball podcast that we do, you guys can hear on Mondays and Thursdays. Search iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you want. You'll get our podcast edition of the shows that we do with our interviews. And this past Sunday, we had recorded the Monday edition. And we were talking about this thing that we have titled the ITL effect. And I know lots of people could probably claim this, but just for some reason in our world, it happens promptly. Like the day of. So let me give you a couple examples. A couple weeks ago, when the guy with the Beat the Streak thing, you know, Beat the Streak with MLB.com, you pick your hitters, try to beat DiMaggio's record, win $4 or $5 million. The guy was 5 hits away from tying it, 6 from winning like $5.5 million. And we talked about it on the show. The day we released the episode, he picked Ezekiel Carrera and lost the record. And we blasted him in the next show, but that happened that day. Next up, the most recent one, Xander Bogaerts had not hit a homer all season long. Bogman, all season long, we
all
decided
season.
To talk about it.
Yes, sir.
We made a bet. We played a little bit of chicken.
Chicken.
Yes, sir.
On Bogaerts, you're like my hype man in the background, just with like one word. You're like, chicken. And we made a bet on it. And the day the episode dropped, Xander Bogaerts hit a bomb, of course.
Well, why don't you tell him the best one, the Welsh?
The best
tell
one.
Your favorite one.
The best one is what just happened. Is you're going to...
Why don't you tell him about it?
So you're going to hear in this interview about Bogman asking Modica about Alex Wood, because Alex Wood has been a topic of conversation. Sammy Reed most recently was on and said he'd be a top 25 pitcher, top 20 pitcher, something like that, rest of season. And we played blind plays on Thursday with Alex Wood. So Bogman had a trade offer out there for Alex Wood. He took it after the show ended Monday morning. Alex Wood on the 10-day DL.
He needs some milk.
It's amazing.
What a surprise. What a surprise.
Get him some milk.
What a surprise.
Is it you or me? Or is it two worlds that collide and create this curse?
It's me.
I think it might be you.
I mean, come on, dude. I accepted that trade at like 2 in the morning.
It's incredible.
And I woke up at like around 10. And yeah, on the disabled list. And I'm just not surprised. Like you know that thing where you go, oh, damn it. I didn't even do any of that. I was just like, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just defeated at this point. And lots of other like little ones.
It's over.
You're so most negative human being for
it's over. It's
fantasy baseball has really took a toll on you this year.
It's not fun.
No. Well, guess what? That's a reason why hour two, we are going to be spending about a half an hour. Bogman will, because Bogman conducted this interview, spending about half of or most of the entire second hour with Chris Harris, one of the best in the industry, talking about a bunch of like kind of burning rookie questions. So if you want fantasy baseball, you want fantasy football, we have got you covered in the next 2 hours on this edition of In This League. And make sure that you always go check out the pods we have going on. ITL Fantasy Football, ITL Baseball. We've got Prospect One. We've got the Basketball Pod. All of those you can search online, and they are much bigger extensions of even what we do here. It'll just give you a scope in everything we have going on as well. Go to InThisLeague.com. Check out the ITL Army. You'll see links for it. It's a way for you to connect with us, to connect with a bunch of like hardcore fantasy people, probably just like yourself, and you can support us while you're at it, and you're going to get a bunch of extra stuff. We do. I just did a prospect chat the other day. Bogman had done a draft chat. We do the extra shows. I got prospect rankings. We do comedy shows. It's well worth your time, and you are supporting these ventures that Bogman and I do. And really, I mean, you're helping Bogman stay afloat here, because fantasy baseball has been rough. It's been rough.
Yep. Yep, you're helping my new fantasy football addiction.
What's the next thing? Just pick one. Pick a curse real quick. What's going to happen on Wednesday? Is someone going to be really good?
David Price will be out for the year.
Okay. Well, I mean, I did the David Price, and David Price was kind of dealing at the beginning of the show. So.
Yeah, well. Yeah,
so remember, the curse works opposite. You just said David Price is going to be out for the rest of the year. That means bye. Go buy David Price. All right.
It's true.
Well, it is a time, because the ITL guest line, it's going to be a buzzing here right after this break. It's Matt Modica, CTM Baseball. It's all happening right here on the other side of this break for In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Stick around, everybody.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, welcome back. It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. As promised, whole bunch of fantasy baseball talk. Danny Salazar, Kyle Schwarber. We've got player debates. It's all happening in this hour. So let's get to it. ITL guest line right now.
His next guest, you know, for
ITL. And here we go.
On the ITL guest line now, he is, we call him Matty Mo. New York's Matty Mo. He's Matt Modica, who you can find on Twitter. Maybe you know him even better as CTM Baseball. He is one of the co-hosts of Roto Experts, which you can find Monday through Friday and Saturday, as a matter of fact, on the radio and TV side. You hear him on Old School Fantasy. You hear him with Joe. You hear him with Piece of P on Fridays. You've seen the Starting Pitcher Index, and you even caught a little glimpse in episode 100 of the ITL Fantasy Baseball podcast as we hung out. We hung out with Matty Mo in the house, New York's finest. What's going on, Modica?
Thanks for having me today, guys. It was definitely a fun time in Arizona. I even made a bold prediction in my little cameo appearance on the ITL when I said that AJ Pollock would outproduce Trey Turner. And unfortunately, AJ Pollock had to go get hurt.
I didn't even remember that. I would still say you're kind of on. I think you're kind of on target for it still. I think you're still good. Got player debates. We've got questions. Let's get into it. Question times, and this is actually perfect. It's really great that we have you on, and we're talking about the starting pitcher index, because one of the biggest stories over the weekend became Danny Salazar, and it started off. It actually really happened so quick, but it started off as this little rumor, this little blurb that was coming up out there, like, you know, Roto World and stuff, where it was like, you know, the Indians are considering moving Danny Salazar to the bullpen, and then like a day later, Danny Salazar is out of the rotation. A guy that, you know, last year was probably taken in the top 80. This year, his preseason value was, I was looking at Yahoo, it was like 112, but I feel like he was one of those popular guys that people would actually take Salazar over like Matt Harvey or something like that. So, you know, the situation has gotten really, really bad. A lot of people don't know what to do. Matt, what is your suggestion on how we handle Danny Salazar? Are you cutting him straight out? Are you going to hold and hope that another one of those pitchers goes down and they give him a chance? Or, you know, I mean, is Danny done? Is Danny done and he's a bullpen guy now?
I don't think he's done. I had him as a top 30 starting pitcher entering the season. I mean, the guy's leading all qualified starting pitchers with a 12.55 K9. So what you got to do in a 12-team league, if you have to cut him, I totally understand that if he's going into the bullpen. But I think this is a short-term solution that could have long-term – could pay off on long-term dividends. You know, we've seen this before. We've seen it with Carlos Carrasco, other pitchers, when they go to the bullpen, Danny Duffy. You know, they figure things out. They simplify things. His main problem is repeating his delivery. He needs to straighten out those mechanics. So if you do cut him in a 12-team league, he's someone that needs to maintain on your watch list. Because in that second half, he could be a guy that you can get, you can pick up, and you know, maybe you can ride him to a championship. Because somebody's going to get hurt. You know, I have Carlos Carrasco in a couple of places. And I love him, but I'm not that confident that he's going to make it through the season.
You know, I haven't been able to get over this because Danny Salazar was a guy that I honed in on about a month ago to look at. When you go look at some of the advanced stuff on him, this thing jumps out to me like nobody's business. And I can't come to terms with the reasoning behind it. Maybe you can shed some light onto it. But before this, Danny Salazar, like you said, coming in, he's a top 30 pitcher. He's been serviceable, if not good. This season, when he's fallen off, his velocity is up. Is actually, it's his highest level since his first year in 2013. His velocity is up on his fastball. It's up on his slider. His curveball is still around the same, and his change. I mean, his curveball and changeup have gone up a little bit. But what I'm getting at here, the speeds and velocity are there, but he is throwing his fastball 11% less than he did last year. He's throwing his slider almost 2% less, and he's throwing his changeup, listen to this, 12% more than he threw it last year. It is the most by 10% he's ever thrown his changeup. Is there something to say that, you know, he's having mechanical issues? You know, that's going to lead to inconsistencies with hitting the strike zone, but he's throwing his damn fastball 11% less and his changeup more. Is there something to that? And why is that not being focused on instead of just going, boom, we're throwing him into the bullpen?
I think what you just brought up is so vital here. The changeup increase, I think it was, he was trying to get that third pitch, trying to offset left-handed hitters, and maybe he's gone too far with it. Because you make all the points you make, something that I've seen, I understand you want to get better versus lefties, you want to develop a third pitch, but, you know, if it's hurting you, I don't know if that's such a if that's such a good thing, you know. And, you know, if he can get the slider to be just a pitch he can get 10% of the time, I think he could be a hell of a more effective pitcher. And hopefully when he goes to the bullpen, maybe it's just simplifying things, getting back to the fastball, commanding the fastball. That's what he needs to really do, make everything work off of his fastball. So I think you're 100% right. The decrease in usage of the fastball is something that is hurting him, not helping him. So maybe, you know, some time in the bullpen straightens that out.
What's the lowest that you're going to take to sell him if you own him in a dynasty league? Because you said before that you think this is going to be kind of a blessing in disguise where Salazar could go to the bullpen and get it straightened out because we've seen other guys do that before. But it's kind of tough knowing his value because it's at an all-time low right now.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't really play in that many – I don't really play in dynasties anymore. I'm so involved in the redrafts. But I would not be selling cheaply on Salazar. Like I said, I do believe just for the state of pitching, he is going to be back in that rotation at some point. I mean, look at Carlos Carrasco. He seems – that arm seems at some point it's going to go. And I just – I think he's too talented. When a guy is leading Major League Baseball in K9, has like a 30% or more strikeout percentage, you know, he just needs to figure things out, simplify his delivery. You know, like with Danny Duffy going to the stretch, Steven Strasburg, you know, so he's got to find something that works for him that he can just simplify it.
But the natural skills is too much.
Yeah, the skills are there. I'm not giving this guy away. In a 12-team league, if I can hold on, I would hold on. I understand with all the injuries we have now, it's become to a point this season, especially with this 10-day VL, really getting tough to hold on to guys. Well, if I did cut him in a 12-team, he's definitely on my watch list. And any news of him coming back to the rotation, I'm snatching him back up.
And pretty fascinating to me, too. Like, by the way, he's probably – it's like a savior for save holds leagues. If you have a save holds league, you can, like, justify value in it. But, you know, if you were to – if I were to – this almost would have been a fun blind play type of thing where if you look at some of the stuff he's done this year – his swinging strike percentage is up. You know, I said his velocity is up. His XFIP is 3. It's lower than it was last season, a 3.51. The ERA is not quite there. His K per 9 is the highest he's ever had. And it's only 50 innings, but, you know, that's still something to be said. And he's pitching at a pretty high BABIP. So, you know, the going against a 3.61, that's not beneficial. But it's a worst season that he's ever had. It seems to me like there are mechanical changes to be had. Potentially a confidence boost. Hey, maybe I'm wrong here. Didn't they do this with Danny Salazar 2 years ago? Didn't they send him down to the minors to AAA when he had a horrible start, and then he came back up and had an incredible second half? Wasn't that like 2015?
yes, they did send him down. He got straightened out. And their pitching coach, Mickey Callaway, he's a really good pitching coach. So I think this will get straightened out. Even if he went to the minors, I mean, if I own Salazar and I'm going to hold on, I don't think it's going to be a long stint. I mean, Josh Tomlin, I know he pitched really well today. He pitched well the start before. You know, it's kind of funny how people start playing better when competition comes and you might lose your job. But I can't count on Josh Tomlin. Trevor Bauer has got a really nice strike percentage. But, you know, that's another tough one.
Yeah. Garbage.
And we hate Trevor Bauer.
I hate it.
He's garbage.
I think everybody does.
Yeah.
The other big thing that happened this week, Matt, was Kyle Schwarber. Kyle Schwarber is going to platoon now. He's not going to hit against lefties. Do you think that this is your last buy low moment for him, that he's going to start to turn around? Or do you think that, yeah, this is kind of what we have in Kyle Schwarber, and he's just not going to hit lefties, and the Cubs have so much depth that we really kind of shouldn't bother with him for the rest of the year?
Well, I'll start with, if I was in a dynasty or keeper league, this is a guy that I would be targeting. In redraft leagues, I own zero shares of Kyle Schwarber. I just thought, you know, he missed the whole season last year. As great as that playoff run was, you know, this is still a young hitter, very talented. You know, the Cubs are asking a lot of him. I don't know why they kept him in the leadoff spot for so long. I just couldn't understand that. But, I mean, buying low in a 12-team league right now, he can't be worse. Maybe I take that shot. I don't think you can really sell him, because I don't think anybody's going to buy him in a redraft. Or if you sell him, I mean, what are you going to get?
Right.
So, I mean, it's...
How about this? How about this, Matt, real quick? Because I have literally gotten 4 messages in the last 24 hours with different ending points or reasoning behind it, but every question started with this. I want to cut Kyle Schwarber. And it's either, is that okay, or should I do it for this guy? People are out. Are you going to cut Kyle Schwarber in a 12-man?
This is the question I always ask myself when I cut somebody. Who am I cutting him for? That's the thing.
Agreed.
I mean, if an Aaron Hicks was out there, which I doubt he would be, but if somebody like that, or say a Justin Smoke right now, who's playing I can't believe I'm saying this. I have one share of Justin Smoke. That's my AL only league, and I friggin' love it. But, I mean, Justin Smoke looks like he's made some real adjustments. Guys like Yonder Alonso. So, I mean, there's got to be guys, depending on the player, I'm going to cut him. And depending on my situation, if I could put him on my bench, I would love to do that. But if I have to cut him, go ahead and cut him.
I don't think I can do it.
You wouldn't cut him for another catcher, right? Because in a lot of people playing Yahoo leagues, he qualifies as a catcher in Yahoo. And when you're looking around at the rest of these catchers, I mean, what are you going to get? Austin Hedges? I mean,
Jeff Bandy?
I would not cut him for a catcher. I don't want to cut him. But if I had a bunch of DL guys or something like that, and I had to do it, I'd say I had better options. You know, like right now, I mean, would you guys rather have rest of the season? Yonder Alonso, or, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying it.
Oh, my God.
Or Kyle Schwarber?
Like, here, I got to put my foot forward here on the Kyle Schwarber stance. It's just, I think he turns this around. It's the type of player that he is. It's a horrible BABIP right now. It's a lot of bad luck. He's swinging at some garbage. Like we said, he's been put in some weird spots in the lineup. I am a Kyle Schwarber believer, and at the end of the day, I think he's still going to be it's going to be really tough for him to come back from. I mean, what are we, like, almost 200 plate appearances, and he's hitting 178? Yeah. I think he could have a monster type of July, you know, with this little push that's going here. So I'm saying all this. I believe Kyle Schwarber will turn this around. I think Joe Maddon and the team has enough confidence in him. He has enough talent, and he has enough talent where if a few things start going his way, you're just going to accumulate stats with that Cubs lineup, and they're not going to give up on him. They've proven that before. So I know he's going to turn this around. I would not cut Kyle Schwarber. B, it's a great one you asked us. But because I can't cut Kyle Schwarber, I can't take Yonder Alonso over him. Even though at the end of the year, I mean, if you did a 5x5, I don't know if Schwarber would beat any of the categories in the 5x5. To be honest with you,
yeah, this one that question is tough, because I think that all depends on where you are in the standings. If you're in,
great point,
you know, 1 through 4, I think you can sit on Kyle Schwarber and wait for that gigantic July to come around. And if it doesn't, then you can just be done with him and pick up someone at that point. But if you're in like last, or you're, you know, between, you're outside of a playoff spot, I'm going to dump Schwarber and pick up the hot guy who can contribute to my team right now.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, if they're saying, like, if someone literally just blanket statement, should I cut Kyle Schwarber? Are you going to say yes, or are you going to say no? Just blanket. No other reasoning behind it.
I would say no. The one question I would ask, who are you going to pick up? I think the Cubs can afford to do this, and I think it would probably really be beneficial to him going forward. What if they put him down in the minors for like 3 weeks? Like you say, have him come up for July, run with him for the whole second half. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I don't hate it. It's not any worse
than him hitting 115 for your team for the next 3 weeks.
No, it's not. But you know what the one thing I want to go look at? I mean, I know this is all new, but I'm just trying to look. Okay, so he wasn't in the lineup today, right? This is on Sunday that we're recording this. Is that true?
No. Yes.
So he hasn't played for 2 days. I'm trying to say, where's the last time they played him? Friday? And was he still in the leadoff spot? That's what I'm trying to get at here, because
I think Zobrist has been leading off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking. Last 3 days he hasn't played. But the catcher spot, it was, let's see, Montero was like 7 or 8. Contreras on Friday was at 5. Like, let's get him in a few of those spots. Let's get him in some 5 and 6 hole spots. If you got to put him at 9, do that. Hit him behind the pitcher, you know, have them walk the pitcher or whatever. You know, try to get to the pitcher, gets on base. Kyle Schwarber seeing fastballs. Just move him around the lineup. You're probably right in getting him down to the minors. I'm just not sure it proves it. I don't know if it accomplishes what the Cubs need, unless it's like we are exclusively having him bat against lefties. You know what I mean? Like, let's get the lefty thing going. Like, I think he can get his momentum going by taking him outside of playing lefties and just hitting him a little bit down in the lineup. But at the end of the day, the conversation is where's everyone sitting on Kyle Schwarber? I bet all of us here probably aren't going to kill anybody for cutting him, especially if you have a decent option. But I don't think any of us want to do it.
Yeah, that's really the thing is, you know, I get needing to cut him or wanting to cut him. I just don't know if it's something. It really depends on where you are, because I can't afford, if I'm already hurt and I can't afford to let this dude drag my team down anymore.
Yeah.
You know
well, I mean? Always say That's too, Matt, I don't know if you feel this way. Like, sometimes the thought of cutting a guy and then him going just off is more just heartbreaking than maybe even losing just like in the first round of the playoffs. Like, being destroyed by a player that you believed in, you cutting him, and then 3 days later is when the turnaround happens. There's nothing more demoralizing where fantasy makes you feel like a little kid than that moment, right?
Well, yeah, you're 100% right. And if you look back to last season, look at guys like Justin Turner, who did nothing for the first 2 months. Guys like Brian Dozier, remember his start? People were
sorry. Oh, yeah, good one.
But real quick on the minor league thing, the reason I bring that up too is the Mets did it to Conforto last year, and it seemed to really get him back. He went there, he crushed. I know it's whatever, Las Vegas and all that, but he did succeed down there again after being totally horrible while being in the majors last season after that first month. So that's why sometimes it's just confidence. You know, confidence getting repeated on, even if you're beating up inferior pitching, it just maybe works out that way.
Yeah, well, I'm going to put a couple of these guys maybe back. We'll come back to the Schwarber thing. But this next question, this will be interesting to get your takes, and maybe we can piece some stuff together. This is a nice PC version of MF Kill, Mary F. Kill, where it's we want to keep one. Like, one is going to keep up what they're doing. One is going to come back down to earth to their normal standard. And then one is going to fall off the planet. And I'm going to give you three names, and you pick, you know, which side each keeps. Cameron Maben, Justin Bour, Jeff Samardzija. One keeps it up, one comes back down to earth, and one falls off the planet.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but Samardzija keeps it up. Justin Bour comes back down to earth. And I hope I'm wrong on this. Cameron Maben drops off the planet because of injury.
You believe – it's so funny because I've always been critical of Samardzija, And I got to see him. It's funny seeing his warm-up stuff. I saw him against Puerto Rico in the spring training here. And I've just never been a fan. He always just loses it. But, I mean, I've been wrong. He's just been a pretty solid option all year. You think he can get back to, like, old-school Samardzija and keep up the value then?
Honestly, I do. I think this is something that he can continue on. His biggest problem this season in the month of April, not so much in May, is that blow-up inning, avoiding the blow-up. He's going to give up some home runs. His home park will protect him on that a bit, but the home runs he'll continue to give up. It's just avoiding that blow-up inning. The control has been pinpoint. The strikeout percentage is back. And I don't know if he was watching a Giant game or something. I forget the exact term. I wish I could remember right now. It's slipping my mind. But he said, you know, there's been time. He's been working on things, and he feels like he's in a good place. But he continues to, you know, try and get better. He's a guy, though, if he was to blow up, it's not going to shock me. But I do believe this is real based on all the advanced metrics.
Okay, what about Maben? Like you said, Maben's going to fall off. He's a popular name that everybody wants to believe in right now. You think he falls off the planet? Any indications, or is this more just track record shows that this is not sustainable for him?
I think it's more of him being able to stay on the field. I'm hoping I'm wrong on this. I got him in a couple of spots, and those spots that I have him in, I absolutely love him. He's been great. I really can't say a bad thing about him. He's a guy that always seems to find a way to injure himself or get on an injury list and miss time. So that's why I'm going to go with him. I'm going to take him there. Justin Bour, you know, I'm rooting for
a nice little streak, Justin Bour.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him, but, you know, I think it's just being a power hitter, you're going to go through peaks and valleys, so he is going to come down.
Okay, so Justin Bour or Kyle Schwarber, rest of the season?
Oof.
I think that one's kind of easy. I would take Bour.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go with Bour as well. I'm gonna go with the guy that's doing it right now. I mean, Justin Bour's power, we don't doubt the power. We were worried about him hitting left-handers. They said prior to the season that he would play every day and all that. They were believing in him. They wanted to give him the opportunity. So I think Bogman's right. You gotta, as much as the name value on Schwarber, you got to go with Bour here.
Oh, man. I almost want to do like a Schwarber Bour, like June 1st on bet type of thing.
Done. I'll do it.
You going to do a 5x5?
Yeah, let's just add it to our scrap of bets, our pile of bets.
Okay, that nobody's keeping track of, and we'll have just no recollection of what's going on.
Well, whoever the Bored Whore is fell off the face of the earth. Bored Whore, if you're there, let us know that you're alive.
Do your free job, please, you don't get any money for.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We will give free retweets, of course. Matt, is this the best time ever in the history of Steven Strasburg to sell on Steven Strasburg?
Of course.
I don't understand how every single player, every single pitcher has gone on the disabled list except Steven Strasburg. He only missed a start, you know, for the birth of his child so far. And with all these, it has to be the highest to sell. And would you sell him?
You're 100% right about, you know, this is the time if you are going to sell high on Strasburg. In my opinion, I believe everybody is tradable. And once again, all these injuries, and amazingly enough, as you said, Strasburg isn't hurt. The one thing is, I'm going to gamble. Unless I get something that's just an offer I can't refuse, you know, like one of those kind of things.
Yeah, come on, Matt. I mean, you know who you got to do. I mean, you have the voice. Just lay it on. This is an offer I can't refuse. Just lay it on a little bit and give that to us when you say it.
If somebody makes you an offer you can't refuse, otherwise, I'm going to gamble. I'm going to gamble here because, I mean, the talent is so real. He plays on one of the best teams in baseball, pitches in the National League East. And, I mean, every season, we're just hoping he stays healthy. And maybe in the year of the injury, Strasburg is the guy that pitches 200 in, like, 10 innings.
It's a bizarre world.
What do they say about hoping in one hand and essing in the other hand?
Exactly. I'm one of those guys that likes to go with the odd ways, you know, everybody's falling off. So, you know, the guy that's always falling off.
Zig when you're supposed to zag. I got it.
You know what I like? This is like this season with Strasburg, it should be like an episode of Black Mirror. You know, just like our modern day Twilight Zone of like no one knows what's going on. Every injury, every player is getting hurt, and Strasburg is just walking amongst them. I got a mini, because we're going to go to player debates here in a minute. I got a mini player debate to give you here. Rest of season, Steven Strasburg or Dallas Keuchel?
That's a really good one. You know what? I'm going to go with Strasburg here. I believe Keuchel is real. I believe that the reason you put earmuffs on in spring training is because of Zach Greinke and Dallas Keuchel. I do rankings twice. I do them in February and March. In February, I had Greinke and Keuchel 2021. Then the news about the velocity, the shoulder, we're going to sit him out a little longer. I bumped them down 10 spots, and I'll never do that again. I'll trust the process going forward. It's very close. I'm going to go Strasburg. I think Keuchel is real, but I'm going to go. I think maybe this, you know, changing his delivery and all that stuff, maybe it keeps him healthy. I think it's very close. I'm going to take the National League guy, the guy that can get me some more strikeouts.
Okay, one more thing on that, then to follow up. And I actually, Bogman, I want to get your take here in 1 second on the Strasburg Keuchel.
No, you don't.
No, I do. That's why, because you just said that. Keuchel, Strasburg, both top 10 pitchers rest of season, Matt?
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
But I'll even throw in Jacob DeGrom.
Okay, yeah, I like that one. Bogman, Dallas Keuchel, Steven Strasburg.
I mean, I'll take Strasburg just because he hasn't been hurt this year yet. I don't believe that he will stay healthy the whole year because he just never, ever does. But the talent is just too high. Like, I like Keuchel, but would you really be surprised in a month if Keuchel's given up, you know, five-plus runs and three straight starts? I wouldn't, you know. So I'll go with Strasburg, but I don't. I would rather take a noose.
You know what? This was like me asking you that was like the scene from Pulp Fiction where I'm like, say what again? Say what again? And you're like, what? Strasburg?
Strasburg? Yeah. All right. Those were the great questions that we always have for the guests. But coming up after this break, your favorite, my favorite, America's favorite part of the show, player debate, Matt Modica and the Welsh after this break. Don't go anywhere. Don't do it. Sports Radio.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, we're back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network with In This League. It's me and Bogman, yes, the Welsh. And we got Matt Modica on the line. We just had a whole bevy of questions. If you missed it, make sure to go back and check it. But now it is time for some player debates.
All right, Matt, as you know, I know you've listened to the show before, it's just rest of season on these guys. We do have one three-way match, but the first one up here, it's a player versus player, rest of season value, which player you are going to take. We're going to start with you, and the first one up, we're going to go to look at first baseman, Cody the Hotness Bellinger versus Jose Abreu. Rest of season, which first baseman do you trust on your fantasy team?
Oh, I want to say Cody Bellinger so bad. I love him. I'm going to go with Jose Abreu in this one. He's got the proven track record. I think at some point he possibly gets moved. I think that would be wise for the White Sox. I think he's going to be in demand. You know, some team will need that bat. He's never batted below 290. The home runs were going down three straight seasons, but the hard hit percentage and the fly ball percentage have increased this year. The strikeout percentage is down. There's just too much to like here in a guy that's done it consistently versus a young stud of the future, a guy that I do believe in rest of the season, despite the fact that he strikes out 30% of the time. It's got to be Jose Abreu for me.
Bogman, Jose Abreu, Cody Bellinger, what do you think?
This one's tough, but I'm going to agree with Matt and take Jose Abreu just barely. I mean, Bellinger already has more homers than Abreu. That's insane. And almost half as many at-bats. So it's strange for me to actually sit here and look and say that I'm going to take Abreu, because when I saw this, I kind of was like, well, it's Bellinger. He's got 11 homers already. But I feel like that strikeout rate is just going to be a lot to overcome. He's going to have to see pitchers twice here. You know, I think the word may get out on him, not that he's going to, you know, bottom out or anything, but he's going to go through peaks and valleys, you know, a lot like we said with Justin Bourque, because he is that type of a power hitter. So I'm going to go with Jose Abreu. I also hope that he gets traded into a better lineup. But, yeah, I just you know, Cody Bellinger is really nice for what he's doing right now. I'm going with track record here.
One correction is he has 10 homers on the season. He hit his 10th
nope,
today.
He has 11. He hit his 11th today, didn't
no.
he?
No, I'm looking at it. He has 10.
Okay.
Today. Yeah, he had 9.
He has a great nickname, Belly Bombs. I love that.
Belly Bombs. Yeah, he came in with 9, and today he hit one on Sunday.
I thought he came in with 10 and hit one. Nope. My bad.
So they're tied. They're both tied here. So this one is really, really difficult because one of the things that Abreu provides you is like a floor first baseman. You know, he like you guys have kind of talked about. You know, I mean, his average is really solid this year. It's amazing, actually, as I'm staring at this. I don't even think I caught this in my brain before. He's never hit under 290 in his 4 years that he's played since 2014. On base is pretty good. He's actually at a lower BABIP than he usually plays at, and his ISO is a little bit up. Doesn't strike out a bunch. Also doesn't walk a bunch. My only concern with Jose Abreu is kind of a couple things. I'm actually on the opposite end. Early in the season, I believe, like in the preseason, I thought Jose Abreu was getting traded. The more of the moves that these guys, that the White Sox are making, I kind of feeling like they might not move him. You know, having league mates of Moncada and bringing in Luis Robert, who could even come up next year. I don't know. They might want some leadership there. So I'm not 1,000% sure that they move him because there were some trade talks. I think Padres or something. I can't remember what it was. Marlins were involved in a couple different ones. So the offense worries me a little bit. But, I mean, he is who he is. So I can't look at exterior things that don't necessarily matter to say that Jose Abreu is not going to be another 25-homer, you know, probably 90 RBI, 80-run type of guy, which is fantastic. I'm leaning a little bit upside, though. I am worried about, like, a struggle with Bellinger. I am worried that, like, something's coming, even though it kind of has because he was hitting in the 300s. He's down hitting 274 right now. I'm going to take a risk, and I'm going to go Bellinger. I don't know if you pin me down to say would I trade Abreu for Bellinger straight up. I might, but I really like the idea if you were working something like that where Abreu and you were acquiring Bellinger. I think at the end of the year, maybe add in a couple stolen bases. I think he can get the strikeout rate a little bit down. He's walking more. Runs, RBIs will be up. And like you said, Boggs, I mean, I think 70 less at bats and the guy's tied in homer. So
right.
I am going to go with Bellinger. Maybe that's a little bit off the beaten path. Most people wouldn't agree with, but give me Belly Bombs.
I don't think it is. I think to be completely honest, I think I'm surprised that two of us took Abreu because Bellinger has just come up and shown so much so quickly. And he's just such a stud that I'm actually kind of surprised the two of us took Abreu. I thought I was going to be the only one.
It's a safe thing. It's kind of like, I mean, your team probably also indicates it. Don't you guys think, too? Like, if you got a team of, I mean, maybe I'm wrong here, but if you had a team of, like, Giancarlo Stanton, Strasburg, you know what I mean? Like, low average guys.
<Take Abreu.
laughs> yeah, you might want a little bit safety. You might want a little bit on the
healthy.
Average.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could float either way, pending team needs. But in a vacuum, I don't know. I think Bellinger could walk into 7 or 8 stolen bases. The average is probably going to be a little bit off, but I think the rest of the counting stats could surpass Abreu.
Yeah, I took Abreu, but I'm hoping I'm wrong and it's Bellinger because I have him on way too many teams. So. After seeing him in the Arizona Fall, like, I just fell in love.
I know.
Yeah.
I remember we were all fawning over him.
I got a triple threat match here for you, Matt, and it's three pitchers, two A's and a Brewer. We got Sonny Gray versus Chase Anderson versus Sean Manaea for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. Who would you take out of this cluster of pitchers?
Mm-hmm. I think two of the guys, it's close. The one guy for me, the top guy, it's not close. It's Sean Manaea. I think what he's been able to do this season, he's had a couple of games where the control has abandoned him, but I think this is a young pitcher that is becoming a stud before our eyes. I so much I like about it. A 13.5 swing and strike percentage. He does need to improve on that first pitch strike, but he's still a young pitcher. That takes a little time, a little getting used to. The BABIP is low, but so is the left on base percentage. The left on base percentage is like just under 60%. The unfortunate thing is the Oakland Athletics defense is horrendous.
Understatement.
So, yeah. So for me, it's Manaea 1. 2-3 is closer than I think people would generally think. I think everybody would just run and say, you know, Sonny Gray based on past. He's got some proven years where he's been really good. I'm going to take Gray number 2, but it's a lot closer. I'm going to take Gray because I do like the fact that the velocity is up. And with the slider usage, the Ks seem to be coming. So for that stuff, I'm going to take him. The first pitch and the swinging strike percentage, I believe, is at career highs for him as well. But Chase Anderson has done some really nice things this year. The reason he's third for me is in that park that he plays, you know, 42% or so fly ball percentage and a hard hit percentage in the mid-30s. Once it gets warmer, you know, I don't think that's a recipe for success. But he's another guy. The career swinging strike percentage is up. I think it's almost like 10.5 now.
Oh, Bachman. The fun thing about this is, really, was anybody going to pick Chase Anderson? I am not. Yeah. I am not going to pick Chase Anderson.
Oh, what a surprise.
I'm not a Chase Anderson guy. Good for him for succeeding a little bit with the Milwaukee Brewers, but he is a false god. It is a false testament that he pitches, and it will blow up in your face for sure.
Shall not see the light.
Uh-uh.
Chase Anderson.
No way, not Milwaukee. So it comes down to the A's pitchers. And it's fascinating, between the three, the only guy that's got a home run to fly ball ratio that's double digits is Sonny Gray. And it's like double of these other two guys. These guys both have it in the, you know, the 7 range. But they're also walking the hell out of everybody, you know, kind of like young pitchers. Sonny Gray is the guy that I'm going to go with here. It's not necessarily about name value, but I think there is something to be had of a pitcher that has been successful before. He's got the lowest XFIP of all of these guys. All of these guys are, their XFIP is hovering. Manea is like close to 4. Chase Anderson is about 4.5. The ERA, he's got the lowest of the ERAs out of all these guys. And it looks like he's completely abandoned his cutter, which actually might be beneficial to him to focus a little bit more. You know, when these guys get into, you know, being the aces of their staff, and if their stuff isn't working, they get bullheaded. Well, it looks like he just abandoned a pitch. And I'm hopeful. You know, he went through the injury. I went to the spring training game where he got lit up. He looked horrible. His mechanics looks great. His pitches look great. But he was just off. Was out for a while, long time. He's back. He had one really good game. I'm hopeful, if picking between the three, it's Sonny Gray for me. Bogman, do you have a non-A that you're going to pick?
No. I mean, I just wanted to mention Chase Anderson in this group because he just came off of his best start of the year. And it was funny because before the start that he had on the 21st against the Cubs, he had only given up 4 runs, was the highest that he'd given up. And then he had his worst start of the year against the Cubs, where he gave up 6 and only had 2 strikeouts in 4 innings and 3 walks. And everybody was like, well, there's Chase Anderson. We know who he is. So they all toss him to the side. And then against, you know, one of the hottest teams in baseball, the Arizona Diamondbacks, even though we're not allowed to talk about
them. Nope, not allowed to talk about him.
he got the win. He went 7, walked 3, struck out 11. It was a nice little revenge game for him because he used to play for the Diamondbacks. But I'm not going to take him out of this group. I'm also going to go with Sonny Gray. The reason I take him over Sean Manaea for this season is the simple fact that I play in a lot of quality start leagues. And I don't know if Manaea's, if his pitch count is going to get him to 6 innings many times this year. He did in his last start. He went 7. And on the 21st, he went 6. But other than that, it's 5 innings or 5 1/3. I guess his first start, he went 6 innings too. But I just – the back-to-back starts that Sonny Gray has put together, I guess I'm just seeing old Sonny Gray here. 2 walks, 8 strikeouts, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts. First one was against Boston. Next one was against Miami. I just really like what I'm seeing out of Sonny Gray right now. So I think I'm going to take Gray over Manaea slightly. But that's a tough call. I think all these pitchers have improved from where we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season, at least.
Talk about a player that, like, please get him in a new place. Like, you know, new city, new team, some better offense behind him. I mean, I don't know if you want to take him out of a good ballpark. You don't want to put him in Cincinnati, but wouldn't mind.
Don't give him to the Mets.
Yeah, no.
He's been hurt before.
Immediately.
But real quick, you mentioned the XFIP, and that's something that I look at. I know people like XFIP. Especially in today's game where the home run ball is such an important part of baseball, I think it's more important than ever that you have the home runs mean something to a pitcher's game. And that's why I am someone that will always look to the XFIP. I think the XFIP is more predictive as well So I think you're right on by looking at that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Bogman are both the same. I don't even bother looking at FIP, even though, you know, we were, this house was built on beating your FIP, if you know what I mean. But we got to look at beating our ex-FIP. We're taking it to the next level. So last one up here, we are going to test. Well, we'll see if any of us pick this player. But we are going to test the what is the official name for it? It's the ITL effect. That's what we're calling it, the ITL effect, where, Matt, I don't know if you know about this, all we have to do is speak things into the universe, and then the results happen. What am I talking about?
When will
about?
Kate Upton f*** Bogman?
Realistic things, yeah. Not fake news. Not fake news. But we talked about it at the beginning of the show. Xander Bogaerts had not hit a homer in almost 2 months, and we talked about it. We made a bet, and the day that we released the episode, he hit a homer. These things happen all the time with the ITL effect. So one of these players is going to test this as David Price is set to make his return on Monday as people are listening to this episode. So, rest of season, David Price versus Masahiro Tanaka, but we're going to end with Matt Modica, and we're going to start with you, Bogman. David Price versus Tanaka. Price is going tonight. We haven't seen anything except five innings in AAA. What do you have to say here? Besides, well, the peeps you're going to be eating because of Tanaka.
Yeah. I like both these guys at the beginning of the year, so that's how you knew how to avoid them. And between Price and Tanaka, I'm going to go with Tanaka. And it's not because of his most recent start, even though it was by far his best start of the season. It's really because I just don't trust what we've seen from David Price. You know, we saw him in two rehab starts. One he had to leave early from. The next one, it wasn't great. Like, he was so upset with his second start, I heard that he wouldn't even talk to the media. And now they're going to just throw him in the bigs after that one. So I have close to zero confidence in David Price. Now, I've got him on a couple teams. I'm going to be throwing him out there Monday, seeing what he has, seeing if it was just he was holding back till he got to the bigs or something. But I'm going to go with the guy who is healthy. And he may be healthy and struggling, but he's healthy. And I'm going to go with Masahiro Tanaka between these two guys.
All right. I'm going to go, and then we're going to hear from Matt. I'm going to test this because I think I'm going to go David Price rest of season. And I know it seems absurd. It really does. And it feels absurd saying it.
It's absurd to be taking either one of these guys.
Well, I mean, you know, if Tanaka had really, besides like one or two starts, shown better signs of life, I think I'd feel more confident. But he's just giving up the home run ball at a really high clip. And I don't know, man. I mean, the Ks are nice, but the walks are – they're getting up there. You're trying to look. Like, we're trying to look. Like, okay, what's the thing that's not working for him? His xFIP is almost 4. His ERA is almost 6. He's just giving up tons of homers. He's not inducing ground balls. You know, 71% left on base, so he's not keeping him on base. And the BAPIP isn't absurd. It's like 330. I think Tanaka will get better, but I do think – one thing we do every single year, and it happens across four or five players, especially when we haven't seen them, is we hone in on why this – just any player, just put a player's name to it – why this player can't be great because we haven't seen him at the majors at this point. Could be Cy Young in his previous years, but this is why he can't be great now. I think – and David Price, Boston isn't the best place for him to necessarily be, but look at how successful Chris Sale is. David Price is still a good pitcher. Sub 2 walk per 9 last year, just under the 9 K per 9, which he likes to hold throughout his career. I'm a believer still. I don't think any of these guys are top 10, top 15 at this point, but I'm going to go with the offense behind Boston, working side by side with Chris Sale, a little bit of management early over what I've seen from Masahiro Tanaka. I haven't seen any specific signs that make me think he's this quote unquote, you know, Cy Young type of up and coming pitcher yet. And I don't want to be there. I'd rather take the chance, the risk with David Price than hope Tanaka turns it around if given the opportunity. And now Matt Modica has to break this tie here. It's really risk versus kind of what you know. What do you think, Matt?
Probably for the season, I believed in the David Price bounce back. That said, I'm going Tanaka here. I did tweet out prior to the season, if Masahiro Tanaka is not a top 20 pitcher, you're doing it wrong. I guess I'm doing it wrong. He's not a top 20 pitcher anymore. But there
is something
here.
Makes me feel a little bit better.
There is something here. I know last season Tanaka and Gary Sanchez had a nice rapport, and I think he had an ERA under 2 in like 7 starts. But this season, it's really He's had five starts with Austin Romine and five with Gary Sanchez. With Austin Romine, he's 4-1 with a 2.21 ERA. Opposing batters average is 2.01, and he's allowed only two home runs. With Gary Sanchez, he's 1-3. He has a 12.27 ERA, a 4.22 opponent's batting average, and allowed 10 home runs. So, Yankees, for now, I know this is a small sample, and it may just be, you know, a blip, but just keep putting Austin Romine behind the plate while this guy's pitching.
Can you tweet that to the Yankees, please? I'd appreciate that.
You know, so David Price's arm, I've been on record. He's been in the minors for a minute. I'm not so confident that he's not going back on the DL. I'm a David Price fan. I do have him in a couple of spots prior to the injury, but I'm going to roll with Masahiro Tanaka.
It's tough, and believe me, it's tough for me to say this, him coming off of a 13 freaking strikeout game and David Price in a bad AAA return. But I think I'm willing. It's all about, I guess, risk here. Like, it comes back to what we'll say a lot. Like, would I trade Tanaka for David Price? No, I wouldn't, especially coming off of that game. I would monopolize. If I had Tanaka and someone offered me David Price and, you know, like an upgrade at a hitting spot or maybe like, a needed closer on the bottom end, I would probably take that risk. But I get why it's a lot riskier and it's a lot safer to go with Masahiro Tanaka, especially if he turns it around. Risky stuff. Crazy. What are we going to do? Except follow Matt Modica on Twitter at CTM Baseball. Check him out, ctmbaseball.com. That's where you can get the updated starting pitcher index, and you can listen to him all over the Fantasy Sports Radio Network and the TV side. Co-hosting on Roto Experts Monday through Saturday, 8 to 10 a.m. That is the radio side simulcast on TV. Old School Fantasy, 10 to 11 a.m. Jesus, you just live there, Matt. And the obviously Pisa Pia on Friday. Any other 12 more radio shows you plan on joining anytime soon?
Whoever will have me. I'm a whore for the mic. So, that pretty much sums it up.
Glad to have finally got you on, Matt, and we'll definitely have you back. And it was good chatting with you.
Yeah, and I definitely look forward to seeing you guys again this November at First Pitch.
You better count on it.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we want to thank Matt for taking out the time for us. Not that he's not already on enough Fantasy Sports Radio Network shows. He's on every other one. He's just doing
the tour.
People
are going to be pissed because we took him away from doing his rank updates.
Yeah, exactly. Well, don't go anywhere. I mean, you know, just stay on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and in 2 hours, you'll probably hear him somewhere. He's everywhere. It's unbelievable. Coming up, though, in the second hour, you're not going to want to miss it. It's Fantasy Football Talk. So if you're having a little bit of jonesing for some fantasy football, well, we got you covered as June is approaching us, and fantasy football is slowly getting into most of our minds. Well, we got one of the best minds joining us. It's Chris Harris from Harris Football, formerly of ESPN, with five burning questions related to the fantasy prospects from the rookie draft. So if that is kind of sitting in your brain, you got dynasty stuff that's coming up, you are not going to want to miss this. So don't go anywhere. Fantasy Football Talk in hour two. It is Bogman, the Welsh, for In This Week.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's hour two of In This League. I am The Welsh. Find me on Twitter at IsItTheWelsh. Joined, as always, by Scott Bogman. Find him on Twitter at Bogman Sports. We are the In This League crew. We are a bunch of fantasy voices for your twisted fantasy mind. That's how we like to describe ourselves. You can find us at InThisLeague.com where, you know, you'll find our articles. You'll find links to the Army. If you want to, you know, get hooked into our comedy shows, which really are beloved. So if you have any sense of humor and you are not a drony robot, then you might enjoy it.
I only want fantasy information. No laughter at all.
There will be no laughter. I mean, not that this is funny. This is not a representation, by the way. My impression is not a representation of what we do, but they are entertaining shows with a whole bunch of extras, and you are supporting what Bogman and I do. So go check it out, InThisLeague.com. Check out the Twitter handles. What's happening right now, I promised you we've got football talk, and that is what's going on. Bogman, you spent we're going to have about 30 minutes here with Chris Harris from Harris Football. Give a quick, 20-second snapshot of what people are going to be looking for and what you want to focus your minds in on. And then the last segment of the show, we're going to decompress a little bit.
Well, whenever you're talking to a guest, it's great because you get their mindset. And Chris is not like most other fantasy football pundits, I guess I would say. He's got his own philosophies, and he follows them hard to a T without following anything really hard to a T. It's hard to describe. Like, he just has the things that he goes by every year but it's not like positional thing. So
a Harris philosophy type of
thing.
Yeah,
Harris philosophy, really.
Yeah.
So pay attention for that. It's pretty interesting.
All right. Well, I'm not a part of it, so you're going to get to enjoy Harris and Bogman for the next 30 minutes. But like I said, segment six, I'll be back, and we will regroup and get a few more fantasy football tidbits. So make sure you hit us up on Twitter. Is it the Welsh Bogman Sports? Any football questions you got? And search the football podcast on iTunes or anywhere. But let's go to it right now. It's Chris Harris. It's Bogman. Fantasy football. Let's go.
His next guest, you know, for
ITL.
And here we go.
All right. I am joined once again by Christopher Harris. You know him from HarrisFootball.com, formerly of ESPN. You can find him on the Twitter machine at HarrisFootball. You can see all the stuff he's doing on his website. He's got his book, The War on Sound. He's got the Juggernaut Pod. He is putting together his almanac right now. He is a busy, busy man. Thank you for taking out some time. How have you been, Mr. Harris?
I'm very well, Scott. Thanks for having me on, man. I love coming on.
You got it. You got it. So what now? We had somewhat of a disagreement. I wouldn't say that it was, you know, that big of a disagreement on O.J. Howard. Have you come over to my side a little bit, knowing now that he's on the Bucks?
No.
Nope.
No, not for redraft. Like, I think he's good. I mean, he's going to be a good player. But the problem that tight ends have when they're – is just it's not a scarce position. And so they have to do so much to really stand out from the pack. And there's really a great chance that in their first year, it's just such a hard transition. So I don't imagine I'll own him on any teams. I don't imagine, like, if someone wanted to spend a first round rookie dynasty pick on him, I'd probably let him do that. I've been telling this story when people ask me about O.J. Howard. About now, granted, Zach Ertz was never the prospect that O.J. Howard yes. is, but I took him like in the whatever third round of my rookie draft his rookie year, right? And I've had him ever since. And like I waited and I waited and finally he's a starter and now he's a starter on my dynasty team. And like, am I happy about it? Like he's just Zach Ertz. Like
he's Zach Ertz.
So
okay.
Right. Like, I'm going to make the argument he probably is a top 10 fantasy tight end, but was it worth all of that?
All the hoopla. Like, I understand.
Yeah, well, and the fostering, you know what I mean? So it's if someone is in a league where tight ends are real scarce, then yeah, I'd be way more into O.J. Howard.
Okay. So I can't bring you around. He's just going to have to play really well. So I get it. You know, I mean, I tried this last time with Amir Abdullah and it didn't work. I look foolish. So O.J. Howard better prove me right this time is all I'm saying. You yes. have McCaffrey and Fournette 1-2. I think it's Fournette 1 in standard, McCaffrey 1 in PPR as far as your rankings go, and then Cook and then Mixon is how your rankings pan out for now. McCaffrey. Would you say it's egregious to take Fournette 1 in PPR or McCaffrey 1 in standard? And how far off are Cook and Mixon from those two guys? Are they in the same tier or just short of those guys? How would that work if we're looking at if we're taking that and just looking at running backs?
So we're talking about like rookie dynasty, yeah?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. I think maybe it depends on the league that you're in and the keeper rules and the acceleration of price and all that stuff goes. I think in a standard league, I'd be pretty apt to take Fournette because
he
could be Bo Jackson. Like if he's Bo Jackson, right?
Yes.
Christian McCaffrey just doesn't have that sort of upside. He just doesn't. And if Leonard Fournette is the big, unbelievably fast guy, now my dim childhood recollections of Bo Jackson are more lateral quickness, sort of more overall untackleability that I imagine that Fournette's going to have, right?
But my Bo Jackson memories are all from Super Tecmo Bowl, so.
There you go. I'm a little older. So it would be tough for me to pass that up. And McCaffrey feels like the 2017 player, like the modern era player where I don't ever imagine that he is a 20 carry a game guy. I think he's just a little small for that, a little fragile, a little – watched a lot of Stanford tape and it's great. Obviously he's great. Yeah. And it's a system where the offensive line is being asked to do pro style things in a way that LSU's offensive line's probably often not. So a lot of it translates, no question. And it's not like he never had runs up the middle that were great, but did I ever see him trucking guys? Did I ever see him really, really be physical in against, major college opponents? You could definitely point to plays where yes, but the vast majority of his plays were little, like his pop plays were little dump offs where the acceleration and the change of direction. And in the end, I think we're going to wind up viewing Christian McCaffrey as a really nice, safe running back by committee.
PPR option.
Good PPR option. And Fournette has probably more of a chance to just go do nothing.
Right. You know, right. He's got the higher ceiling and the higher floor, Fournette.
Or the lower floor, right. Lower
floor, yeah.
But so I think I'd probably be leaning in Dynasty, especially. It feels like I would like to get the guy who's going to be the number one overall player in fantasy at some point, or at least in terms of value based drafting, right? In terms of that scarcity idea, right? And I don't think McCaffrey has that potential. I think Fournette does. But in a point perception league, I don't imagine Fournette's ever going to, you know, catch enough passes to really be that excited about him. So I'd say, oh, if I just sort of want to mellow out. The answer is no. I mean, wow, I'm going on for 5 minutes. The answer is no. I wouldn't be outraged. And I think it's a pretty obvious 1-2 for me. If we're going to talk then about Cook and Mixon, Mixon.
That's kind of, I mean, I'm not surprised to hear that answer because I think that too. But Mixon, there are a lot of people that are very, very high on Joe Mixon. They're, they're not worried about Jeremy Hill. They're not worried about Giovanni Bernard. It's for me, it's kind of hard to slate him. And Dalvin Cook has the same problem because of Latavius Murray. I just think that, by the end of the season, Cook is going to wind up having that job. But, I mean, there's a lot to be said for experience. So for me, those guys are so much tougher to rank. But there are some people that are just – they are potential drunk on Joe Mixon.
Yeah, but that's fun to be in those people with those leagues, in those leagues with those people, because they get. I remember I was on some Dynasty pod. For people who listen to my various appearances, forgive me for repeating this story, but like I remember being on Dynasty podcast last summer, and they didn't have Larry Fitzgerald ranked.
What?
Right, undraftable Larry Fitzgerald, and this is my issue with a lot of the potential drunk dynasty mindset. Right, lot they do good work, they do good evaluations, but then they get just overly excited about Nelson Aguilar's potential in his second year. Right, they I'm not kidding. Like every dynasty site last year,
I've been there before. I've done it. I think everybody has done it, especially if you're newer to fantasy football. But I mean Nelson Aguilar,
But like. Going into year two, he was ranked way ahead of Larry Fitzgerald in most people's dynasty ranks. Larry Fitzgerald wasn't ranked in a lot of the ways, right? Because people are thinking, well, man, in year five, I could really have something. And you know what's even better than winning my championship in year five is winning it in year one. And so I'm not even getting it. Like, because any criticism depth chart wise you have for Cook or Mixon, I think you could probably have for McCaffrey too. And who knows, maybe Fournette. Like, it's not like there aren't other running backs on Jacksonville's roster. So in Dynasty sort of does give us permission to look a little bit beyond the depth chart into what we think the ability will mandate sometime in the future. The issue with Mixon is a freak. So he's a crazy talent. He really is a crazy talent. However, it's the Big 12, and defenses are not real in the Big 12.
Oh, I'm a Texas fan. You're a Texas fan, aren't you?
I am, but yeah. I'm wearing a Texas t-shirt as we talk, and it's a joke conference as far as defenses go, right? Everything is spread. And so I think Mixon's a freak, but it's never going to be as easy as it was at Oklahoma. But the reason to be dubious about Mixon, I'm sorry, like we have to bring the off-field stuff onto the field.
It's
like the reason
POS
to be some
tier between Cook and Mixon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I consider Mixon to be a little more of a candidate to be a POS than Cook. I mean, Cook has done some stuff, but I don't have video of him.
Neither of them are great, right? Yeah.
Right. So that's fair. That's another reason to consider Cook away from the other two. With Mixon in particular, there's a definitely non-zero percent chance that we're being, snow-jobbed here into thinking that he's a good human being and that something bad happens. And if everybody in this rookie class, if you have to pick one person where you say this guy's out of the league for behavioral reasons in 3 years – maybe it's not likely for Joe Mixon, but I think he's the likeliest.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're taking bets, that's the guy you bet on for sure.
And so then and you make a good point. Dalvin Cook, there's maybe lesser, but also some bad stuff there. And so that's an issue, too. With Cook, I think it's more about if your resume. I mean, his film is great at Florida State, but if your resume is ultimate quickness and then you test quite poorly in the quickness drills, it at least makes you go, all right, well, I have to build in a little bit deeper, steeper, bad floor than I thought I was going to have to.
All right. What about Sam, JP Ryan, Kareem Hunt have been in the news a lot, and I know that you're not a big rumor or news guy, but
I really am not, especially not in May.
Yes, yeah. Yes, especially not in May. Is there any type of news, and let's talk specifically about these guys, because we have Samaje Perine already being talked about going over Robert Kelly and Matt Jones and being number one in the depth chart, and then Kareem Hunt, you know, just somehow I don't – like the Perine stuff I kind of get, but Kareem Hunt competing with Spencer Ware already, it, you know, we're 4 days into OTAs or whatever it is, kind of surprises me. Is there any type of news that you really pay attention to outside of injury before we watch these guys in preseason?
No. And in fact, the preseason is probably somewhat suspect as well. I mean, a lot of times we have to realize who they're on the field against. But right. No, the answer is just stop. Everybody should stop. I mean, this is we talked before we started recording about why I stopped doing the football podcast between like a couple weeks after the draft and July 7th.
You don't want to be reporting on all these stupid rumors, right?
Yeah. Only thing that can happen is bad. Only thing that can happen is bad analysis in that 2 month period. It really is true, because in the end, I mean, bless the NFL beat writers, right? But they have to justify their jobs,
right?
And this is all this is, and which isn't. I mean, Samaje Perine was a super productive player at Oklahoma. I mean, he's the opposite of Joe Mixon in terms of behavior and teammateness, yes. And you know, sort of just being blood and guts, team first, sort of awesome kid. Like we never really know, but my sense from what people say about him is that you can't get him on a roster and get him off. You know, he's going to be like a connective tissue type player on your team, which is not a bad thing to have. And so I absolutely consider him a potential factor, but he's Robert Turbin. That's just, he's not a special player. He's Robert Kelly, frankly. They're sort of big. And I'm not, you know, I'm like, sounds funny. I'm not really even kidding. Like, he's a big kind of lumbering guy who, Matt Jones is a better athlete than either one. If he could hold on to the ball, he'd be the running back, but he's not even going to be on the team. So maybe it works out that Perine over Kelly, they're very similar styles. It makes me think Chris Thompson gets a more defined role than either one of those two guys, maybe.
Right.
And then
like we're all looking at Perine and Kelly, and then Chris Thompson is a guy kind of like Theo Reddick a couple years ago.
Sure, except for then you're going to be puking in your mouth for that, because you know Chris Thompson in the end is going to give you two good fantasy games, and the rest of the time you can't start him. I mean, it's we'll see how it shakes out, but nobody should be painting Samaje Perine as an elite NFL player, because he's never going to be. And then Kareem Hunt, just that talk just it makes me laugh so hard, because nobody's ever seen Kareem Hunt play.
Right,
he's a I guess, you know, some people who do this for a living have seen him play, but the rest of us idiots are watching YouTube, right? With yes. At least with Samaje Perine, and we've seen lots and lots of games where we watched carry to carry. You know, Kareem Hunt, I guess he's good. Like, I don't think he's good. Like, he's okay. Test said all right, but like, we'll see. All I can say about Kareem Hunt is, sure, there's value there. If you're going to tell me he's now the 60% and Spencer Ware is 35, like, okay, I personally don't imagine that happens.
Yeah.
But like, to get crazy about Kareem Hunt right now is just the typical, like, I'm trying to think of like, who wouldn't that guy 10 years ago? There was some tight end that everybody loved who went from like Kansas City to San Diego or something 15 years ago. I know Chris Wilson with a K. Remember Chris Wilson?
Yes, Chris Wilson.
Like, people are like, oh, dude, here we go. It's a Chris Wilson time, because people want to out clever each other. Right.
Yeah.
I used to call it the Chris Wilsonification of fantasy.
Too cute, right? It's just too cute. Yeah, I'm completely with you too. This part of the year, and the worst part about all the rumors that are coming in right now is this is the part when a lot of people, their fantasy baseball team is in the toilet, like mine is right now, and you know they start shifting towards football now, and this is the first stuff that they're seeing is Samaje Perine and Kareem Hunt. You know, like you said, it's great to be in leagues with those guys, but it's annoying, you know, seeing that stuff, because you just kind of have to roll your eyes at it, you know.
Right. Neither you nor I would like unilaterally tell people that Samaje Perine's worthless for fantasy.
No,
we're just saying like, you're way too excited about Samaje Perine right now. We'll see in 3 months.
Don't get caught up. Exactly.
Yeah.
I see that on your list, it's only a few spots between Corey Davis and Mike Williams and John Ross. You have John Ross ahead in standard and Mike Williams ahead in PPR. Is that right? Or did I flip it?
No, I think that's right. It would be Williams over Ross in PPR, which makes sense, because Ross is, you know, likely to be the big play guy. Yeah.
Right. And then when I was looking at your positional ranks, there is a significant gap between Davis, who I think you have in the 30 range, and then both of those guys, John Ross and Mike Williams, you have in the 50 range. What is it that makes that gap so big for this season, and would you have the same gap in a dynasty type of ranking?
I wouldn't. So those receiver ranks that you're talking about, I don't actually have dynasty ranks on my site yet because I just felt like, okay, there's some red meat to be thrown out here, but I can't be updating 10 lists beginning in May, right? So let's start updating them all in July. But no, you're picking for me anyway. I'm interested in your opinion on it. But for me, the bigger difference for a redraft league for wide receiver is more about situation. It's hard to look at Tennessee and not say, okay, well, for this very highly drafted, very highly decorated, very good athlete to land in a situation where there are not a lot of very obvious threats to him starting, there's, for me, more appeal, safer downside, less. Whereas the other two guys, yeah, AJ Green is in Cincinnati, and there, a whole lot of guys are in right. Yeah. Well, yeah. and a whole lot of guys are in or for the Chargers. So, that's probably accounts for the bigger redraft in Dynasty.
Andy Dalton is your favorite, by the way. I don't know why I said that for AJ Green, but yeah, Andy Dalton is your favorite. I agree with you. Like, I think, Corey Davis goes in and is just the number one guy, the number one option in Tennessee. I don't know if that's what you're saying, but that's kind of what I think is, you know, big dude.
I'm saying
it's a target.
At least he's number two. Like, Rashard Matthews has made a living out of being underestimated,
yes,
and
he was
really, really good again production wise last year. Was pretty intensely focused on a few games, and yet I think, what was it, 9 touchdowns? It was, you know, like, really interesting year. Still a really good player. Sort of made to be a split into someone else's flanker. And that's like 20 years ago speak, but like made to be a number two, essentially more of a possession receiver. If you're going to even if you tell me Rashard Matthews is one, I think Corey Davis is two, whereas maybe John Ross is two, but I don't, you know,
Tyler
there's
Boyd,
situations
yeah.
where it's or Uncle if, Duck, Brent LaFell, like,
yeah. And if Tyler Eifert decides he's going to play, you know, that's a whole thing. I like Mike Williams over John Ross though. I feel like he could go in and be the number two guy, especially since, you know, Keenan Allen can't stay on the field. I know they have – like, I see Corey Davis ahead of Mike Williams because the Chargers still – they got a lot. You know, they got a lot of wide receiver. You know, Keenan Allen's coming back. Gates, Hunter Henry, Tyrell Williams was really good last year. And who am I – Travis Benjamin, right?
Travis Benjamin, and they still have Dontrell Inman, although I guess he's hurt. But, like, yeah, a lot of bodies. Here's the thing about Mike Williams. I mean, I think Laquon Treadwell hurt him perceptually and maybe in being the number one receiver off the board. If you're talking about
Laquon Treadwell, we talked about him too.
I mean,
that guy. I still think that he can come around.
It's way too early to say he can't, but if there's a concern about Mike Williams, it's that he's Laquon Treadwell. It's that college makes you look faster than you are, and you get to the NFL, and if you can't get any separation at all of those freakish things that you can do body control wise and hands wise don't matter because they can't get the ball to you. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen with Mike Williams, but that's the worry. The worry is, okay, well, he's not, he's not testing out like Kevin White, you know, the big body who can fly, but of course then he winds up not being able to stay healthy. So yeah, I think there's a little, if you'd told me that if Laquon Treadwell's disastrous rookie year had never happened and you'd told me that Williams got drafted after Davis in the NFL draft, I'd have been really surprised because I think that's the hole that you poke with Mike Williams. But the reason to boost him up is that the best that college football can give you is those two championship games and playing some serious, well, he didn't play in the first one, but like throughout his junior year playing against some great opponents and, you know, just obviously looking like a man among boys. And yeah. Corey Davis was doing it in the MAC, and Corey Davis was doing it and Corey Davis didn't even test, right? There's no athletic baseline of what kind of athlete he actually is. So, but I think very much Treadwell leads to Williams's doubts.
Yeah. I understand that. I'm a little bit potential drunk on Mike Williams, but I've got Corey Davis ahead of him for this year. So I think I'm still taking Corey Davis. He's landed in a better situation. It's just one of those things, you know.
All right. Well, we're going to pause it right there with Mr. Harris, and we will be right back. Corey Davis, I'm really excited about him. But I tell you what I like better than anything is a nice tight end. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? I like a nice, firm tight end. And maybe we have some tight end talk from this draft fest right after this break on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. Stick around. Tight end.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Welcome back. I promise tight end talk. Here it is. I see that you have David Njoku pretty low. I'm pretty excited for him this season because I can't point out who the Browns' leader in receptions will be. They don't have much. They've got Kenny Britt. They've got Corey Coleman, who, you know, had a couple games but was hurt a lot last year. You know, Ricardo Lewis, Rashard Higgins are all in there. I mean, Duke Johnson is a nice target. I have learned, though, that saying that they traded up for David Njoku and they immediately cut Gary Barnage are crutch arguments. So I won't even bring them up. So, but David Njoku, can you let me know why you are kind of low on him? Is it just tight end is a tough position to learn immediately?
Yeah, that's it. It's you know, from what I'm gonna not lie to you and say that I watched every University of Miami college game this year. They haven't really been a program I've been tracking closely, but I certainly watched the highlights on YouTube like everybody else, you know, and watched a couple complete games of him. How awesome is that, by the way, that people are doing that now on YouTube?
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. It just makes my – and they draw the little arrow for every play.
Yeah.
Here's where he's lining up. Oh.
That's I watch a lot of them on draftbreakdown.com. That's,
right.
That's a great source. They're really, really good.
Right. I mean, just the fact that people are literally saying, oh, no, not only are you going to watch every play, but here he's lined up right here for every play. Oh, it's just so good. But of course, in the end, I'm just watching a couple of games and, you know, it's often against not the greatest opponent. But I am trusting people that OK, athletically, he's a really, really interesting, cool, excellent, good player. It's a tough, tough position to learn. And it's the Browns. Like I think someplace where fantasy needs to go. And I think it's evolving. I think it's getting there. Is this mindset of like, well, someone's got to catch the passes, so it might as well be him. It's what leads us to speculate on Torrey Smith last year, right, in San Francisco. Well, someone's got to catch it, right? And then it winds up being some other doofus or some other combination of three doofuses, right? And it's not Torrey Smith. And in the end, you're left like, I don't really want a piece of what I know is going to be a crap offense with a crap quarterback. And then I'm adding in the idea that the positions are extremely hard to learn. And even, I mean, Eric Ebron, wasn't I fighting this exact battle with Eric Ebron 3 years ago? And
yeah.
Aren't we still, hasn't he still maxed out at 5 touchdowns?
I think that, but sometimes the, you know, some doofus has to catch the ball. We'll sometimes get us Josh Gordon too. Josh Gordon is obviously a fantastic athlete and was.
No, you exactly proved my point, Scott. Nobody was saying Josh Gordon. Nobody was saying someone's got to catch the ball, so it must be Josh Gordon. He was a supplemental draft pick. Nobody expected anything from him right away. Like, they were probably picking.
I mean, I watched him at Baylor. I think I remember exactly where he was when I found out he was in the supplemental draft. I like the guy.
That's fine.
I was at the All-Star game in Kansas City. I was like, oh, Josh Gordon went in the supplemental draft.
My point is the argument that people look at bad teams without established receivers with bad quarterbacks and they go, okay, yeah, I hate the situation, but someone's got to catch the ball. Like, I don't think anybody said that about Josh Gordon. I mean, I'm pretty sure they didn't. I don't even know if we look at that situation. Who else was on that team, on that Browns team?
Oh, I can't even remember. They were really bad. That was the Hoyer the Destroyer years when he was really, really great. And Johnny Manziel was awful.
I think I don't know. But anyway, so I don't think there are too many times where we look at the terrible offense with the terrible sort of just the bad situation for a receiver to come in, and then it works. This is going to be Pierre Garçon this year.
Brian Quick is the same type of situation as Josh
right.
Gordon. You know, you take Brian Quick at the end of the draft, and a lot of people were, oh, that's my guy, that's my sleeper guy, and he didn't pan out. I guess my thing for David Njoku is tight end is really deep this year. And, I mean, I also play in a lot of deeper leagues. I got a lot of 16-man leagues because we do a lot of listener leagues and stuff like that, and we want to get as many people in as possible. So David Njoku is kind of a guy that I can see taking a risk on, you know, if you're taking him really late, because tight end is deep anyway.
But what's the upside?
I mean, the upside is you get Jeremy Shockey.
No, not this year. He's not going to be Jeremy Shockey this year.
Jeremy Shockey was Jeremy Shockey's rookie year, wasn't he?
Well, I mean, he's not good. The reason he's not going to be is because he doesn't have
Eli Manning.
The quarter, Kerry Collins, right?
Yeah, Kerry Collins. You're right, Kerry Collins.
Like
I said, Eli Manning.
Yeah, like I am. I don't see any way that the Cleveland Browns. I mean, Gary Barnidge did it in his ninth year in the league or whatever, but like I see a very low percent chance. I mean, the reason I have him like almost, you know, basically undraftable in a redraft league is just because what's the best? Give me Jack Doyle. Give me.
Oh, Austin, yeah, yeah. No, I want those
Hooper.
Guys.
Give me, you know.
I want those guys ahead of him, too. I'm just saying that, like, deeper league, you know, I just feel, you know, I don't know. Maybe I am one of those doofuses that says somebody has to catch the ball. because somebody does have to catch the ball. And I'm not, like, super excited. I'm way more excited about O.J. Howard than I am David Njoku. So I'll just spit that out right now. But
yeah, I get you. The answer that I have, though, is, like, what's the best case is he catches 50 passes for 600
red zone guy,
20 yards,
I mean,
and
that's
six touchdowns.
Unpredictable. But.
Six touchdowns. Like I'll give him 50, 606, which
best
is what
case.
every other tight end's going to do too. Yeah, that's I think it is. I guess if you accidentally luck into like I don't
yeah,
see a
you
scenario.
Can I use your word? You can't squint and see anymore.
I can't squint. See, like Evan Engram, I can squint because there's a lot of really good weapons. It's a good quarter, you know, relatively to what they have
he's
in Cleveland.
Not
a good
tight
quarterback.
End anyway. He's a wide receiver. I mean,
okay, but
he's a wide receiver that's listed as tight end, right? You know, I get what you're saying. What about some of these running backs? The rookie running backs are going to be grabbed and stashed for this season just because of the mess of running back. You know, maybe it's recency bias that I'm seeing, but. There's a lot of running back by committee this year. What is it? I heard you talk about Tariq Cohen and how you like him. I want to know what is it that you love about Tariq Cohen, and also with some of these later guys, who do you see as having the best long-term value?
So, I mean, you know, let me just say, like with Njoku, when I was sort of I lapsed into redraft talk there.
Okay.
Right. But what you said is, I mean, he is my third tight end off the board for a dynasty rookie draft. And he probably is a pick in the first couple of rounds. I'm with you there. Like towards the end of the second round, I'd be fine taking Njoku.
Okay.
I was more thinking about 2017 as I
didn't
as,
mean
it was
to
my
you
fault.
Off
I transitioned.
On Njoku. Sorry.
No, you didn't. You didn't. I just realized, oh, wait, he's still asking me dynasty questions. Crap. I just screwed the last question up.
Well, I mean, I did ask you about, you know, taking him in a deeper league for this year. I mean,
right,
you know,
right.
I asked you both. So
fair. So Tariq Cohen, teeny little guy, again, someone who we can't possibly pretend to know what he is with North Carolina A&T. I can watch some YouTube film.
Yeah,
that's
he could
it.
Be
I
Darren
didn't.
Sproles and he could be Chris Rainey.
Right. And he's way likelier to be Chris Rainey than he is to be Darren Sproles. Darren Sproles doesn't come along very often.
Yeah.
But Tariq Cohen happens to be coming along at a time where, again, I think the NFL just watched Tyreek Hill do what Tyreek Hill did and says, ooh, players like Tariq Cohen can be that, you know, just get him in space, use him in creative ways, run some reverses to him, have him return some punts, and suddenly he's sort of a little bit of a leech on Jordan Howard or whoever. Because if Tariq Cohen gets to touch it 8 times a game, that's a big problem for Jordan Howard and or anybody else in Chicago. It really is.
John Fox. I mean, John Fox is known for doing this type of stuff. I mean, you know, he had John Stewart and D'Angelo Williams in Carolina forever. When he's in Denver, he was rotating back. So, yeah.
Sure. And Tariq Cohen won't line up at running back very often. He's going to line up at running back 3 times a game. Like he could get killed. If you ever had, it's like it's what it screams is, hey, our running back isn't in pass protection. There's no way that as a rookie, Tariq Cohen, or, you know, probably in his NFL career, turns into a legitimate blocker, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Danny Woodhead.
Tomlin called it putting a tow hitch on your Ferrari when they asked him about Chris Rainey lining up in, you know, protection. He's like, we're not going to do that very much.
Right. And Danny Woodhead, he's a little bit bigger and probably a little bit stronger. And yet I still think defenses make a mistake with Woodhead not realizing like, oh, well, he's in pass patterns. He's not blocking. Blitz. You know, when Woodhead's in there, blitz, you know, send extra guys. So I don't imagine it's any sort of backfield rotation, but he'll be in the slot. He'll run a jet screen, like he'll run a jet reverse. And so there's the ceiling is nothing. There's no ceiling. the ceiling is maybe he has a miracle season like Tyreek Hill did.
Yeah.
But like he could be a problem for other players. I'm very interested. I'm not in love with him for fantasy, but I think if I'm choosing between him and all of the people who are going to be not, they're not freak talents. So they're going to be so situation dependent, things working out in their favor. Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones in Green Bay, Joe Williams in San Francisco, Marlon Mack in Indianapolis, Jerry McNichols in Tampa Bay. Like none of those people can say what they want. None of those guys are special. None of those, they're not great prospects. They could work themselves into nice careers, but it
right.
sort of everything needs to mesh.
Yeah.
Tariq Cohen, I might take ahead of all those guys because there's a chance I could catch lightning in a bottle and score 8 touchdowns.
I like Jamal Williams because I feel like the, you know, the Packers don't really have that kind of, you know, between the tackles grinder type of guy. So I could see him coming in and making a decent impact. But I think what hurt Jamal Williams was him taking Aaron Jones because I think now it's kind of a mesh. You know, you got Ty Montgomery who played really well for what he was doing last year, you know, converting from wide receiver back to running back. He did a little bit of running back at Stanford. But and then adding Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones kind of messed that up. I think if they just had one of them, I would be more into whoever it was. So Tariq Cohen long term, you would take over those guys? Any James Conner love or Brian Hill or anybody else?
No. I mean, they're all in the same neighborhood. Right. I think I've got a chance to catch lightning in a bottle in a dynasty draft, stash Tariq Cohen, and just see if he turns into a fun Tyreek Hill-esque sort of player who probably, if I'm honest, will torment me more than anything else because I'll never know when I can use him.
Right.
But he has the crazy wild open field, like touch the ball one time could be a touchdown thing that Tyreek Hill has. None of those other players do. And that's a talent that, well, if I'm going to pick one talent among all of those running backs that we just mentioned, the one little category that's better than anybody else is in any other category, it's Tariq Cohen in the open field. So I think they all belong in the same conversation. And I'm not outraged if people don't agree, but I think the NFL sort of trending towards Tariq Cohen in a way.
If you had to grab and stash one of those other guys that's not Cohen for this season, who would your grab and stash be at this point?
Just for redraft, I guess I'd want to see what happens in San Francisco with Carlos Hyde. You know, Joe Williams, boy, I mean, you talk about – I don't think he's going to like –
stuff.
Yeah, just he retired, right? He retired and he did a bunch of dumb stuff before he retired.
But it was, I guess his sister passed away and he felt guilty and he was, you know, like he fell into some type of depression or something. That's what he was saying at the combine anyway.
Okay. But I mean, he's the kid who stole stuff and got kicked out of school and like, he's not the best citizen in the world. Right. And so, and frankly, not a between the tackles player at all. Like he's a perimeter player almost entirely in college and he had huge big games and, you know, sometimes the big games, was it the UCLA game where he's hit 500 yards or something and every play is like an 80 yard run around the perimeter and you're like, I mean, it's awesome, but it's completely not translatable to the NFL.
That was his first game back too.
Right. And that's because, what's his name? Gus Johnson was calling him the retiree to the entire broadcast. I did watch that film. But yeah, you know, there's some dots that I could connect there and say, well, Kyle Shanahan really likes those smaller, quicker perimeter type players. If he can run a little outside zone, that's never been a Shanahan has never shied away from outside zone. So maybe Joe Williams fits that bill. I think it's likelier Joe Williams is a whole lot of nothing in the NFL, but I if I'm going to take a redraft chance, maybe that's him. You know, I want to like Jamal Williams. He is a big body in a C where they don't have – I mean, Aaron Jones isn't a big body at all. I don't think Aaron Jones is an up-the-gut player either. I just don't know that Jamal Williams really winds up fitting what Aaron Rodgers is in Green Bay. It seems to me they just are going to be kind of like the Patriots. Do the Patriots have a big thumping back anymore? Maybe they've kind of decided, we can give it to Gillislee if we need it from the one, but otherwise let's just throw a bunch of guys in a pass pattern and let the quarterback – you know, and so I think Aaron Jones and certainly Ty Montgomery can be that more than Jamal Williams can.
All right, there you go. It's Bogman, Chris Harris. Great, great stuff.
And you're going to find more of that actually next week. Chris Harris is going to be joining us again for part two of the five burning questions. And we're going to get just down to brass tacks with the normal players, not just the rookies. So don't miss that. It's going to be on the football podcast if you want it early next Monday. Otherwise, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Chris Harris will be back for hour two again for more football talk. But let's get into it. Let's decompress. I got some questions for you right on the other side of this break, Bogman. So don't go anywhere. It's Bogman. It's the Welsh. We're in this league, Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, welcome back. It's the final segment of In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thank you so much for taking the time out to listen to us, whether it's live, whether it's on demand, which you can do just by going to fantasysportsnetwork.com/radio. And they got a whole like on-demand section, and you will find In This League. And if you can find all of our shows, listen to them at any time for the radio side, or you can go search iTunes. Just put in ITL, and you will find all the crap that we got going on, because it's a lot of crap. I mean, it's good crap, but it's just, you know, it's a lot of crap. It's a lot of stuff, Bogman. Just like this episode.
A lot going on.
Just like this episode. There's a ton going on, from baseball to football to everything you guys just said. So I want to cover a couple things here. Well, let's start with this. What's the main takeaway that you get from that conversation? I mean, you guys honed in a lot on the running backs. I got a running back question I want to hit. A lot on the tight ends, the wide receivers from this rookie class. What's the main takeaway as far as Chris Harris's perception that you are walking away from, and that you can, you know, you would suggest to listeners like, hey, listen, you know, I mean, like everything that Chris Harris says,
right?
But this is the thing that even kind of changed me.
Well, yeah. Okay. So my opinion, you know, I was big on Mike Williams going into the draft, and I remember actually the first time I talked with Harris talking about Mike Williams and saying, I don't understand why the Chargers would take Mike Williams, because it just doesn't make any sense, right? Because they have so much going on. And, you know, with him and Corey Davis, that's where you see the separation. Is there's so much going on in San Diego. But if I hold that opinion, I have to hold that opinion on Mike Williams if I'm going to say I like David Njoku, because I am, you know, like he said, one of the doofuses that says, well, someone has to catch the ball in Cleveland. Now, I understand the risk on David Njoku. It's not like I'm going to go out there and take David Njoku as the eighth tight end or anything. He's going to be ranked not in my top 12 tight ends. I know that. But
we had talked about that. I mean, we've had a lot of conversation where it was like, it could get close, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, him and O.J. Howard, close.
Sure. Well,
I mean, maybe not now. Maybe as the season gets on, talent-wise.
Yeah, here's the deal. Like O.J. Howard, that when you look at tight ends, there's more than 12 tight ends that I'll have over David Njoku for sure. And O.J. Howard will absolutely be one of them. But I don't mind taking David Njoku for the upside in a deeper league, or even in a, you know, 12 or 14 man league. I don't hate taking him. He wouldn't be my starter. But there's so many other tight ends that, you know, if he doesn't work, you can throw him on the scrap heap, and you can add Austin Hooper. You can add, you know, Jason Witten. You can add Fedorowicz.
Don't you think there's like a – I want to get your opinion on this as you're talking about this. This popped in my head. Isn't it essentially like there's two types of tight ends in the world that you're going for? You're going for the big play, you know, touchdown monster. Or if you're – I mean, and this kind of applies to PPR, by the way. If you're playing in a PPR, you're going for the guy – a guy like an Njoku, you know, at one time, a guy like Jimmy Graham, you know, the guy that could bust out, get you the touchdowns. I'm trying to think, there were a couple, Julius Thomas maybe at one time. Or you got to go for the floor guys that are just going to catch lots of balls, like old school Delanie Walker, you know, and
well,
is that what you're looking at with
Njoku? There's only like four or five tight ends that have that giant upside. You know, it's Gronk, Kelsey, Reed, Olsen, and Jimmy Graham. If you want to throw in Walker there, and I know a lot of people are excited about Martellus Bennett, you know, then you have your Kyle Rudolphs. You have your, you know, I would put Tyler Eifert up in that category, but he will never play 16 games in his career. Zach Ertz is a nice little, you know, whatever. He's a 70 to 80 catch guy. Hunter Henry would be much better, but he still has Antonio Gates to deal with. Then you have, you know, Jason Witten and Jack Doyle and O.J. Howard and Njoku and, you know, Evan Ingram. Like, you just have this big cluster of, and there's look at this, dude. I'm looking at Fantasy Pros rankings for PPR. There are valuable guys way down here. Jared Cook could be huge in Oakland. Austin Hooper in Atlanta. Charles Clay in Buffalo. Julius Thomas going to Miami.
So let me ask you this, and I got a question for you.
Okay.
It's a two-parter question. Do you think Njoku this season has some of the highest upside?
it's at so tight end. Like, sure.
Yes or no? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. So because of what you say, because I agree, I'm looking at this too, and I can see, you know, freaking Witten 18th overall, you know, Gates 19th. You still got freaking Zach Miller, Jesse James, who's going to be the tight end at 29 for your Steelers.
The risk for Njoku is good because if he doesn't work out, whatever. Look at all these dudes.
That is exactly where I was going to go.
Yeah, you can throw them off the pile and pick up somebody else. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
That is exactly the point where it's like, if you're not going to get the top, you know, five guys, you're not going to get one of those, you know, those elite top end players, and you're, you know, you're battling in the 11 and you're like, well, should I take Ebron or Jack Doyle or Hunter Henry? I mean, I don't know. Actually, now that I'm looking at this, 12 is really tough to justify taking Njoku at any point. But I guess where I'm going with it is, even if you're at 16 or 14 or something like that, like, it might be worth on the bottom end, just go take a guy like Njoku. And if it doesn't work out, then just go pick up Zach Miller or go pick up, you know, Jesse James.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That was kind of the point I wanted to make, but for taking David Njoku. But I understand, you know, if that's not what people want to do, we haven't seen him. He plays for Cleveland. They're going to have an awful quarterback, whoever it is. So,
and there's still a lot to see there. You're right. Yeah, there's a lot to see.
Tight end is a tough transition position going from college to the pros, but you know, I think it's going to be easier for Njoku because he's not a blocking tight end. He's not an inline tight end anyway.
So. Okay, so let me talk about the other thing, because I think this thing is really important. We covered this at length on the ITL Fantasy Football podcast, but I want to bring it here a little bit and extend the conversation. Is Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon, to me, he's just, I don't know, he's one of those divisive players that I don't think agreement sits anywhere at this point. And say divisive just because, like, I think everybody agrees that his talent is towards the top. You know, I mean, I think you and I talked about this. You compared him to Marshall Faulk, just skills wise. And if you're looking at pure talent and skills, this is a guy that probably rivals Leonard Fournette. You know, he probably even surpasses somebody like Dalvin Cook. But he's in a, as a word I always use, wonky situation. You know, I liked how Harris said in the conversation, you know, that a lot of these players, really any of these players, he even said like Christian McCaffrey, who he's really high on. He's really high in Christian McCaffrey, rightfully so in PPR, I guess. But there's no guarantees with any time you got a couple guys in front of him. We don't know what the coaches are going to do. Coaches can have allegiance to, you know, some of these older players. And the Bengals have Gio Bernard, who's going to come back at some point soon. They've got Jeremy Hill. There's no guarantee that Joe Mixon, until they tell us, until they say Joe Mixon's the number one, he's going to get 20 plus carries a game. There's no guarantee, but he's being treated like he is the next big coming of a running back. He's in Fantasy Pros, he's 17th overall in running backs. He's in their fourth tier. He's ahead of guys like CJ Anderson, Mark Ingram, Spencer Ware. And when you look at the actual like rankers here, you know, some of the high guys, you've got, let me see if I can, a couple names you guys might know. Dalton Del Don from Yahoo has him at 14th overall. As far as running backs, when I say overall, just know I'm talking about running backs. You've got Mike Clay from ESPN has him at the 18th running back. Chris Meany from right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network has him at 15. I feel, and I don't know if this is wrong or right. You tell me where you are, because I know it's a little difficult for you 100% to gauge where you are on Joe Mixon. But this is a pure balance of top talent versus rookie and situationally. And I don't know how you balance and taking the risk by taking a guy like Joe Mixon in the third round. I mean, I think it was Evan Silva who had him at like 41 overall, like early fourth. That's pretty rough.
There's just too many factors that stack against Joe Mixon to be taking him in the third round for me. And the biggest one is, you know, we just don't know. We just have not seen him play in the NFL. So that's the biggest thing. And the other big thing is they already have a bell cow running back in Jeremy Hill, and they have a pass. We were upset about this situation last year.
Yeah.
With Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard. Now you take Joe Mixon and throw him in the middle of it. How is that going to make it much better?
See,
it's not. Like, unless they wind up trading Jeremy Hill before the season starts, I'm just not going to be that high on Joe Mixon. I think someone has adjusted their ranks, because the other day when we were looking, they had him at 7, now as high as 11. So
yeah, that was a maybe it was our call out that we did.
Yes,
well, that person actually still has him at 7. Actually, I'm looking. Still have him at 7. But you know what it is to me? This kind of comes back to that conversation. It's like that old Jamal Charles conversation, where Jamal Charles, you wouldn't call him a bell cow, but he was maybe the most efficient with what he was given. You know, the guy could be given 12 carries and have 130 yards, and then 4 catches for 40 yards.
Right.
Is Joe Mixon that type of player? Is he going to be? Because I think he could be. Do you do? Because it's hard pressed for me to look at Joe Mixon in his rookie year, maybe second half of the season, when we saw players like Derrick Henry not be quite put in that, to say Joe Mixon's going to get 20 carries and 3 or 4 catches. Now, will he get 12 to 14 carries, or will they ride the hot hand if there is a hot hand? I could totally see that happening. But for a third round pick, I mean, that seems
Joe
risky.
Joe Mixon is 2 fumbles in his first game away from getting 300 yards in his rookie season.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's that. Because they have a proven guy, there is the off-field stuff, which, you know, we want to hope that is all over with for him, and I think it is, but you never know. You know, you don't know what's in somebody. So the off-field stuff, there's 2 proven running backs with him in that system. The offensive line isn't that great in Cincinnati. They added John Ross also, so
A lot of weapons.
Jay Green. They drafted Tyler Boyd last year. Tyler Eifert's coming back.
Get Eifert for at least 10 games, right?
Yeah. So you have all of these weapons in there, and just to say Joe Mixon, I'm going to put him in the top 10. It's just a little bit crazy to me. That's all.
Yeah, and I like him in like the second, you know, like the second or the second half of the fourth round type of stuff. Like maybe.
Yeah.
But you know, projections. Just looking at projections that Fantasy Pros has. 775 on the rushing, 200 on the receiving. If you look at the totals, it's under 1,000. Yeah, it's under 1,000 total yards. It's about 7 touchdowns, under 1,000 total yards, about 27 receptions. It's not third round pick numbers, like you said. It's more fourth or fifth. A lot of people got burned by Derrick Henry, and I'm not saying it's a cautionary tale, but there are a lot of fantasy minds that aren't quite there. You know, I was looking, Tristan Cockcroft, you know, he's on the lower end, the low 20s. And I think that's, you know, in the range of like what you and Chris Harris were getting at. You'd rather take the risks on guys like Christian McCaffrey, who might not cost as much as a Joe Mixon, especially if the hype is there. And I think going into seasons, this is what you guys should all know, Joe Mixon has the potential to have the most helium as far as the rookies go. Fournette's going to go where he does. Dalvin Cook is probably going to slip. Christian McCaffrey and Mixon are the guys that have the most helium to jump up that actually matter as far as cost. You know, I mean, like a Joe Williams or something like that later in the draft. That's not worrisome.
Right.
But I think the Joe Mixon conversation is one we'll continue to have all season long, because these rookie running backs have inserted themselves right into the RB2 mix and even RB1 mix this season. And there's like 4 or 5 of them. And that is much different than it was last year, where it was like Elliott, then Henry, and then nobody.
Yeah, my thing with Joe Mixon really is, if you're in the third round and you have the choice between Tom Brady or Joe Mixon, you know,
yeah,
I'm taking Tom Brady all day long. Or Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Any of the big quarterbacks, because big quarterbacks, I mean, that's a lot of points for your team. And after the big tier of quarterbacks, it gets kind of bleh.
Well, longer discussion you can have, too, is in the ITL Army. It's only for ITL Army members if you want to check it out. Patreon.com/ITL Army or go to InThisLeak.com for the link. Is Bogman has a secret little small edition show with Chris Harris that's going to air about drafting strategies. So, you know, running backs, I think, are going to be key this year for where you're going to pounce on it. And there's a little bit of that. We'll have plenty of that conversation all year long. But if you want a little extra that only ITL Army members can get, as you're listening to this on Wednesday, this should be up, you can get that there. We got lots of little secret content that we put up in a little, you know, short edition of Bogman and Chris Harris, and he'll be back next week. And that is the show. Make sure, if you missed any of it, to go back and find it at fantasysportsnetwork.com for this edition, or you can get the podcast, as I've told you, at ITL. Bogman, there's a whole bunch going on. Don't want anybody to miss the baseball podcast that's dropping on Thursdays, and don't miss us every Wednesday, 8 to 10 Eastern. For Mr. Scott Bogman, I am the Welsh. This is In This League. We are out.
Bye-bye.